Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Two baseball notes here at the top of the hour. Atlanta Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr. actually was pulled in the game yesterday after he admired a long shot in the outfield. It ended up being off the wall, and then he didn't really run it out. So Brian Snitker, the manager, said, hey, we don't tolerate this. We're getting into the stretch run. You are a star on this team. You need to act like it. He ended up being a long single that could have easily been a double, but he didn't hustle because he was admiring the view of the long shot. Good move by Brian Snitker as we head down to the final 6 weeks of the season. Absolutely great. I mean, just listen, you've got to nip that stuff as quickly as you possibly can and get that done. The other thing, Ron, a non-Metsy thing to do, Pete Alonso hit his 40th home run of the season.
Bad move.
That sets a rookie record in the National League.
It's a bad move.
I know, because now the Mets are getting relevant.
Good move to sit Acuna Jr. Bad move for Alonso to keep hitting home runs.
He's going to hit 50 home runs this year.
Yeah,
he's
going to hit.
He's got 6 weeks left in the season. He's going to hit 50.
Does he realize what he's doing?
I know
he doesn't. He has no clue. He's in it for himself. That's selfish.
Greedy. What if he goes on a serious tear and flirts with 60?
Selfish.
That's 20 home runs in 6 weeks. A lot.
Keeping Tebow out, selfish.
I know. Keeping Tebow out is selfish. Mets just took 2 of 3 from the Kansas City Royals and still keeping their playoff hopes alive, despite the fact that they're 9 games back of the Braves in the division.
I know, but we literally are talking. I mean, the Mets are in wild card position.
They are in wild card position. Right now, they're 2 games back. It is a cluster of teams battling for the 2 wild card spots. The Nationals lead that, but the Cubs are right behind them because they're in a chase with St. Louis for the division lead in the Central. Then Milwaukee, same thing. Philadelphia, 2 games back. The Mets are 2 games back. The Giants are 3.5 back. If you're baseball, this is what you're looking for. Not so much in the American League. It goes Cleveland, Tampa, and Oakland all separated by 1.5 games, and then the Red Sox are 6.5 back. But the National League, lots of fun, and the Mets are involved in it. Good job, Pete Alonso. Good for you, Florida Gator.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. Back to Pete Alonso of the Mets. I don't know if he's dating anybody, but I haven't noticed that he's now the New York dating celebrity scene that seems to happen all New York athletes every now and then, especially ball players, where they're dating like a singer or some Victoria's Secret model. They used to do this with Matt Harvey. Harvey was a single guy in New York, and next thing you know, he's dating like this gal and that guy. It's on the pages of the tabloids in the New York papers. I don't see Pete Alonso. I don't know if he's married. I don't know what his situation is, but I know this: he's not hitting the gossip circuit. But he's like a legitimate baseball star. He did not think he was going to make the roster to start the season. I don't need to make the roster. He's going to set the home run record for the Mets down the road. I'm telling you, this kid's going to hit 52, 53 home runs when this season's over with. I played his college ball at the University of Florida. So another good thing for the Gators. Who, by the way, opened the college football season on Saturday when they take on the Miami Hurricanes. Oh, and by the way, here's another thing on that. They have decided, those two schools have decided, you know what, this is pretty good. Let's play this again. They're going to do a home-and-home series starting in 2024. I'm telling you, the landscape of college football is getting better and better. Not afraid to schedule these games now. Used to be petrified. Now, not so much. Used to be like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play in the SEC, play Florida State every year, and then play Miami. What are you, crazy? I'm not that dumb. I'd like to have a winning record. But now these two schools have decided to play a home-and-home starting in 2024. Good for them. It's good for the state of Florida, too. I wouldn't do it, be honest with you. If I was Jeremy Foley at the Gators office, I'd look to try to find a way out of that. Remember they were talking about doing a series with UCF? UCF wanted to play the Gators?
Yes.
And UCF was, they said, look, we want to play Florida, but we want a true home-and-home. And Florida said, no, we won't do a true home-and-home, but here's what we'll do. We'll do 2-for-1. You come here twice, and then we go there, but we don't play in your crib. We play at Camping World Stadium, whatever the other stadium is, the big one. We play there on a neutral site.
Well, I mean,
and UCF said no.
And if things keep going like this, what's happening with the Gators right now, UCF will be able to dictate terms very quickly.
Very quickly. They got recruits leaving the program already?
They've had five.
Had five leave the program? What for?
All various reasons. One is
Dan Mullen
is a newer
lying
one.
To them about playing time?
Well, one is a newer one. 4-star wide receiver RJ Henderson.
Yep.
He will not enroll in Florida after not qualifying.
Oh, that stinks. That's embarrassing. That's too bad.
Yeah, he couldn't qualify to attend Florida.
So he was supposed to get a certain grade point average, and he couldn't get the grade point average? Oh, that's too bad.
So the class that was ranked number 9 after the initial recruiting period now would fall to 17th.
Oh, God, that's sacrilegious.
Will be the second worst of the Rivals era.
Oh!
So in addition to Henderson, the other four players they've lost, Chris Steele, transferred to USC.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
Defensive back. Quarterback Jalen Jones left after being accused of sexual battery.
Yeah, he was one of a few that have gotten trouble for this.
And then you have linebacker DeJuan Black going to junior college, and offensive lineman Dayavi Hammond, who is also going to junior college.
My God.
And then there's another signee, Wardrick Wilson, hasn't yet joined as his visa situation plays out.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's six different players.
That is a whirlwind of problems for Dan Mullen. My God.
Yeah.
You know, that's so interesting when you talked about the rankings, the recruiting rankings. Isn't it amazing that something like, oh, we're just a website that figures this stuff out and then we let you know where you rank is really important to fans, alumni, and especially college presidents?
Oh, they, you know, it's like you said with the, you know, the college, the AP poll's coming out today.
Yeah.
And that it really doesn't mean anything except for marketing purposes.
It does.
And that's what ranking your recruiting class is all
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Exactly. You take a bunch of high school kids no one's ever seen play, right? But these websites, and then they go, that kid is the fifth best defensive back in the nation. And then you land him, and that puts you in a certain category, which again, all of this is subjective to the opinion of the people. And then coaches are judged on that opinion by these websites, whether it's Rivals or whatever it is. Then coaches have to answer to the both AD and the school president, because the school president is hearing from the boosters, why don't we have a top five recruiting class? And it's tough. I mean, you're a coach, you're like, what do you mean? I got the kids I wanted. I grade these kids the way I grade them. But just because a couple of people at a website that does this for a living says I got the 10th best, what if I think I have the 3rd best? Does that matter?
Well,
it doesn't matter.
Okay, putting it to you this way, too. With the Gator marketing department, is there a guy who is just so frustrated because he spent months and months touting their top 10 recruiting class?
Right.
And now in all the papers, it's saying 17. It's like, I can't spin this.
I know. It's nothing I can do now.
We're not top
11.
10.
If it was 11, I might be able to bend a few ears, but 17?
17.
We might as well have no kids coming to school here.
Might as well shut the program down.
Shut the program down. There's no income. Yeah. 17. Give me a break. Exactly. It is such a crazy business, too. I know. Listen, I have friends who are into that stuff. Like, they really know. I mean, look, I've said this before. It is easy when you're on the outside to sort of look at people who do that for Rivals and all those websites and sort of laugh and say, oh, they don't really know what they're doing. But they do. They really do. They get the film. They talk to coaches. They do their due diligence. But that doesn't change the fact that it is still an opinion-based thing. Right? They're still ranking these kids based on opinions. right? They see the level of competition. Like, if you have a kid, like, let's say you have a kid like, I'll use Jadeveon Clowney because he was such a beast in high school. Let's say you have Jadeveon Clowney, and I took him and I put him in just by geography in some of the worst divisions in high school football here in Nashville. You could pretty much put it in anywhere, Houston, anywhere you want, right? But find the one where the schools are really small and they're just not on the upper echelon. He would look amazing, right? He would look incredible. He'd be getting 5-6 sacks a game, right? He'd be outrunning running backs. He would just be a dominating beast. But their job isn't to notice that and say, my God, he's going to – their job is to look at the talent around that kid and all the camps that he attended, what coaches are saying, what other coaches are saying, et cetera, and putting that all in a package. It's still legit. But at the same time, can you imagine being a coach, right? You've been at a program 3 or 4 years. You're starting to build something. Yeah, maybe you made a bowl game or two, but you're not one of the national powerhouses yet, but you feel like you're putting something together. And you have to sit and listen to a school president say, well, Jim Bob, the car dealer who gives us about $2 million a year, is wondering why we're not top 10 in recruiting based on this website. Can you imagine being a coach having to answer for that? Going, oh, well, we were ranked 13th. Yeah, but he wants to know why we're not in the top 10. Well, can you just trust me that I got good players and we're building something here? That I'm sorry that these websites don't like the kids we got, but I guess I'll do better next time. I mean, it must be just mind-boggling.
No, because there are some, you know, there are some athletics. I mean, they should all know, like the athletic directors, the presidents. I mean, they should know that, hey, it's just a number.
Yeah.
You know, just like these rankings that are coming out. Like, you know, even if you are the number 17, that doesn't mean that you're going to finish in seventh place or get a better chance at a bowl game.
Yeah.
You know, now that's New Year's Eve bowls.
That's exactly right. And that's the whole thing. And I remember, you know, I know I've talked about this before, but it used to be, hey, these preseason's rankings mattered because if you had a long way to climb to the top, it was detrimental, right? Like the year Auburn went undefeated, they weren't in the top 25. They watched USC and Oklahoma play for the national championship. They were the 1 and 2 team in the nation, but you know, Auburn had started way outside the top 25, and as they were winning games in the SEC, they were supposed to be building momentum up to a point where they could be a legitimate debate, but they had started so far behind. Now that's the old days. This today, the committee is saying, this is why we take forever to give you our rankings. We don't give it to you until late October, early November, because we are absorbing it all as if the season is a clean slate. The preseason rankings don't do that. The preseason rankings say Clemson is the national champs. They have pretty much this coming back, including their quarterback. Yes, they lost these players, but these are the guys that are filling in. We still like this. We still like their schedule. We still like who they are. They're number one. Alabama, same thing. They lost a lot of guys to the pros, but they always rebuild. Here's their recruiting class. They're number two, right? That's what the AP and the coaches do. Well, SIDs. But nevertheless, you get what I'm saying. The committee goes, oh, no. We start with a clean slate. We're looking at all of it from week one, and then we absorb it for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, however long it takes. Then we give you our findings. Right? Now, people say they wish that these polls do it, but these polls are now irrelevant. They're mostly for marketing, and they're mostly for fun, and they're mostly for bragging rights. And to be honest with you, it's tradition. Right? This is what college football does. It's tradition. Right? And let me tell you, there isn't a fan base in the world If you're ranked in the top 10 over your rival, that doesn't use that as talking point.
Easily.
Right? I mean, come on. We all do it. I mean, the years South Carolina were decent and in the top 25, I loved it. Are you kidding me? I loved it. Even if it meant nothing, if it meant absolutely nothing, it's great. It's great to see your school in the top 25. Right? So it's just the way it's built. And the way, you know, again, going back to tradition. So, yeah, that's coming out today. And there'll be, look, I guarantee you there's going to be 100 articles of who got hosed, who got overrated, who got underrated. And we'll dive in, you know, because people, we like to kind of absorb that too. It's just like, oh, look, they've got Wisconsin here. That's not going to work. Or Notre Dame is way too high or way too low or whatever.
Well,
that's
what they do. Talk about the first game of the season coming up, Florida versus Miami.
Right.
can't wait to find out what their ranking's going to be, and I'm sure certain they can't wait.
I'm sure they can't wait to slap their ranking's a number on be. That bad boy. Are you kidding? Absolutely. Watch Saturday night, because it's much better to say watch number 8 Florida go up against a number 11 Miami than it is to say Florida and Miami.
Yeah, and you know ESPN, who has it, is salivating at the moment right now.
Right, exactly.
Like, we can't wait. We're hoping, you know, is it possible to have, you know, these two teams should be in the top 25. You know, right?
And a lot of us have watched games where we don't know anything about the teams or barely know any of the teams, and we do it because the numbers indicate that it's going to be something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That this is going to be a big deal. Look at this Pac-12 battle.
Well, that's the whole reason why we watch.
Right. Because maybe we'll see an upset.
When you have when Monday morning comes around and then you have all week long preparing for that Saturday game, there is a marquee game every Saturday. And you can't wait to watch it. And you always hope to get, you know, especially when it's two SEC teams, because that's where it seems like to happen all the time, you might get two top five teams playing against each other.
Hey, if I'm doing something on Saturday, if I'm traveling or I'm at my son's game or my daughter's game or something, and I'm missing a good portion of college football, one of my scoring apps allows me just to see the top 25.
Yep.
Right? I mean, if you take that away, well, those are the big games. I'm sorry. Those are the big games.
Yeah, I don't really care about the other guys.
Then
sorry.
I'll just flip through. And then I usually check the SEC, and that's it. Then I go to SEC, and I check the top 25.
Yeah.
It's
not really going to care about those bottom dwellers in the Mountain West Conference.
That's
sorry.
Right. Sorry. That's just
no,
the way it goes.
You give me, you know, if I'm on the road and I got number 2 going up against number 6, I'm paying attention.
Exactly.
I'm checking my phone, getting yelled at by my wife.
All right, we're going to discuss the Indianapolis Colts as our AFC South previews this week. Well, again, Bob Kravitz will join us. We'll talk to him coming up in 15 minutes as we continue along on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, AFC South Week. In our NFL previews, we have the Colts coming up. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Bob Kravitz coming up in about 10 minutes from The Athletic to talk Indianapolis Colts and Andrew Luck's injury, which, look, any preview, and we will get to the acquisitions and the rebuilding of the defense, Marlon Mack, the offensive line, how great it was last year. Frank Reich, his play calling ability has been fantastic. But let's be honest, any sort of preview with the Colts is going to really center a lot of the information on Luck and his health. Right. Once again, we're at a Andrew Luck is hurt, but we don't really know how hurt kind of situation. There's not a lot of new information. I mean, the Colts are doing their best to try to keep people up to date with it, but there is no more new information. They said they'll know in a couple of days on the ankle. He did work out in Saturday's game against the Browns a little bit, doing some footwork drills, but we'll see. Maybe they're being cautious. Maybe he's fine and they'll work on it later. But my God, it's almost. It goes from this is really easy, this is just a couple of days, to another week, to 2 weeks, and it goes back to, it feels like 2017 again, where it was finally like, no, that's enough. He's done for the year, right? I don't think he's done for the year on this injury. I think he'll play and he'll be back. But where is his durability for a guy that, you know, played all of his games early on in his career and then the injury started hitting and then finally lost a full season and now is getting banged up again? So again, it all comes around to Andrew Luck. But what a year last year. I'm not kidding when I tell you how rare it is to see a 1-5 team make the playoffs, winning 9 of 10 to turn their season around and to go down that stretch. I mean, you're 1-5. You're looking for answers, right? I mean, it's not just let's get back into it. Like, it is what is wrong? What's happening? Why is this not working? What are we doing wrong? I can't imagine a lot of players on the team being realists, not sort of the, hey, we're going to play every game one at a time using all those sports cliches. I mean, the guy, when he goes home at night and he's talking about his job with his wife, right? You know, complaining a little bit about this guy or this coach or whatever. How many of those guys in the realist moment that they had, how many of them said, oh, you know what, honey, we're almost there. We just got to tweak a few things, and I think we can run off 9 of 10 and make a run at the playoffs. Or how many of them said, it's going like a sinking ship, and here's why it's a sinking ship, and these are the problems. And that's when you get seasons that disappear from you. Because look, we're all human. I mean, I hate to say this, but most people don't live in the cliched world that sometimes sports gives us. You know, when guys say, no, we're just going to take it one game at a time, a lot of that's baloney. They just say that because they think that makes you guys feel better about them, right? They don't want to admit that they look ahead, right? The Steelers are a perfect example of this. When they were talking about New England in the postseason and forgetting about Jacksonville, you know what happened? The human side of everything came into fruition. They didn't see Jacksonville as a legit threat. They saw Jacksonville coming in as something they'll just get by, beat them, and then off to the AFC title game where they would play the Patriots. They were human. And can you imagine being 1-5 last year with the Colts and feeling like, okay, either A, everything's working but a few things and we tighten up a few things, we'll start winning, or B, feeling like the season was going down the drain and going down the drain fast. Knowing that at the best you could do is 11-5, and that would be good, but 10-6 is still going to be hard, and 9-7 probably is not getting you in. Right? So now you're thinking to yourself, okay, I'm one and five after six games. I got 10 games left, and I can afford to lose one, but I can't afford to lose two. Right? That two is too much. If I lose two, that's really it. And I'll lose games on good days. We'll lose games where we play well and just the luck of the game lends us on the losing side of it. But they were able to go 9-10, win and make the playoffs and erase all of what happened in the first six games of the season. That's remarkable because it not only takes a coaching staff willing to make adjustments and team that's willing to make adjustments, it does come with a certain mindset of, hey guys, we really do have to take it one game at a time. I know it's hard to do, and I know you're looking at it from a standpoint of we don't have a lot of wiggle room, but we do have to take it one game at a time, win and then move on, win and move on, win and move on, and not look at the largeness of it. Right? It's like training for anything. It's like when you're training to lift weights and you want to get to 400 pounds. You don't look at yourself benching 100 and saying, oh my God, I'll never get to four. You say, all right, I want to get to 125, now 135, now 145, and eventually I will. Right? That's what the Colts had to do, but that's not easy to do. And that's a lot on Reich, but it's a lot on the team. But one thing that got better with them, and you saw this last year, if you watched any of their games, the thing that they did great last year was their offensive line was great. Quentin Nelson was fantastic. Andrew Luck went five games without getting sacked. Five games without getting sacked. And that's impressive. That really is. In this league, that's where guys get big money to sack the quarterback. To keep your quarterback upright for five straight games, that's pretty good. And I know Luck has a lot to do with it, getting the ball out and all of that, but still, I don't care how quick your quarterback's getting the ball out. Your offensive line's doing a good job five games, doing a real good job. And now this team that feels like, okay, we got better on defense. We went out and drafted a lot of defensive players. We're giving Andrew Luck a few more weapons. All right. We're building a team that's going to compete for a Super Bowl. All right. We went 10-6. But now we feel like this is a team that can go 12-4. We feel like we've righted this. We've got a very good coach who calls very good plays, and we got one of the top quarterbacks in the league. We've built more weapons around him. We've shored up our defense, bring in Justin Houston. We drafted a lot of young, tough guys. We're ready. And now Andrew Luck, ankle. But who knows? Could be worse. We don't know yet. So we're wait and see. It's got to be frustrating. It's got to be frustrating because, again, and Ron and I have talked a number of times where this is a kid who is so can't miss coming into the NFL and is yet to bring the Colts a Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying pressure's on or anything like that. I don't know. But I do know this. I really did think the Colts would be in at least one by now. And I never thought I'd see him lose an entire year to an injury, even though I know injuries are prevalent in this league and are really more of the norm than not. But still, bouncing around with injuries less. Bob Kravitz next, talking Colts.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It is AFC South Week as our NFL previews continue. And we're looking at the Indianapolis Colts today. Bob Kravitz joins us from The Athletic to preview the Colts for 2019. How are you, Bob?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. Let's start with last year. 1-5 to 10-6, making the playoffs. I'm sure many people have said this or processed what happened, but what did occur with this team to turn it around and actually make a run of winning 9 of 10?
Well, they got the running game unleashed a little bit. I think the two big things were number one, Andrew Luck kind of getting his legs under him. You know, Luck, the first, I'd say, 4 weeks, just wasn't throwing the ball the way we're used to seeing him throw. Another thing is Anthony Costanzo returned from an injury, and that seemed to solidify the entire offensive line. It should be mentioned at the middle of the season, the schedule was unbelievably soft. They didn't have to take on any top elite quarterbacks, so that helped. But they were much better defensively than anybody expected. And I think they head into this season feeling pretty good about where they're at.
Let's get to Luck now. And people who kind of look at the Colts on the periphery and see another injury and kind of roll their eyes and go, oh, my goodness, where we go again. But where are we with Andrew Luck? What do we know? What do we hear? What is the story with the ankle?
Well, from what I can gather, they still aren't completely sure what's causing the discomfort in his calf and ankle. They're still doing tests. They're still trying to get to the bottom of that. I will say that 3 hours before the game against Cleveland on Saturday, he was in the end zone doing bag drills, moving side to side, and looking really good. He did not look like a guy with a serious, serious injury that's going to keep him out of the lineup 2 weeks from now. So, Frank Reich has made it very clear that he needs an answer by the day after their final preseason game, which is next Thursday at Cincinnati. I think they're relatively confident that he'll be able to go. Based on what we saw in that pregame drill, he doesn't look like he's hurting too badly or that he's terribly far away. Having said that, we saw that 2 years ago when he was throwing the ball reasonably well, and next thing you knew, he had pain again in that shoulder, and he was out for the entire season. So you never say never when it comes to injuries, especially injuries that happen to Andrew Luck.
How does he take that? I mean, he seems like a very likable kind of guy. I know he's got that competitive drive and all of that, but how is his demeanor? This has got to be frustrating. He's still young, and to see just the last few years, it's injury on injury.
Yeah, it's killing him because for a number of reasons. One, like you say, he desperately wants to play and show that, he can be the kind of quarterback that he was his first 3 years when they were crazy successful. And he doesn't like being a distraction. He, in fact, when he was going through all the shoulder stuff, he went off to Amsterdam to do a lot of rehab. He just wanted to get out of town and not be a distraction to his team. So I think that part of it is maybe even worse for Luck than the physical situation, is that he doesn't want to be the guy that everybody's talking about 24/7. He just wants to be a guy on the team playing. And so it's been very difficult, but he's been through it before, and I think he's better for having gone through it before.
Bob Kravitz joining us on a Progressive Insurance Hotline, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. That's Progressive. Let's talk about the offensive line. It got a lot of rave reviews last year, what it did for Luck, keeping him protected and establishing the running game. Is it better in terms of is it still the same? Did they lose any pieces? How does the offensive line look going into this season?
Not one. Every single guy on the starting offensive line is back. Quentin Nelson didn't play the other day. The offensive line, quite honestly, has looked pretty terrible in the two preseason games. How much you take out of that, I don't know. I mean, they went from the most sacked team in the league, and you know, 2 years ago, to the least sacked team last year. So I don't worry about the offensive line. They've got some issues elsewhere, but I think that once they get Quentin back and, you know, Ryan Kelly, you know, once they get that group of five back with a little bit of depth, I think they're going to be just fine. I think that Andrew will once again, assuming he plays, will be able to step up in the pocket and make plays, which is something he didn't have the luxury of doing in previous years.
Bob, people said last year in the going into the postseason and then finally losing to Kansas City, boy, they could use some more weapons offensively. Did you buy that? And if you do, did they do that?
Well, that's one of the questions. You know, they went out, you know, right, you know, last year in that Kansas City game, the only, you know, real weapon they had besides the quarterback was T.Y. Hilton. And he was playing on one leg. I mean, his ankle was completely messed up, and he was just gutting it out. But clearly they needed a number two wide receiver. So what they did was sign Devin Funchess, Carolina. Don't know about him yet. You know, he hasn't dropped many balls yet, but he has that reputation. But so did Eric Ebron, and Eric Ebron came here and had a Pro Bowl season. They drafted Paris Campbell out of Ohio State, the speedster. Problem with him is he's had a hamstring issue, and he hasn't practiced in a couple of weeks. So, you know, they're still looking for that number two wide receiver. Deion Kane is coming back from an ACL from last year, has looked really good in camp. So, you know, I think they've got depth at wide receiver. I just don't know who their number two is going to be just yet.
All right, let's flip over to the defensive side. How have they rebuilt that? I know they went heavy with defensive players in the draft, but how does the defense look?
Pretty good. You know, I mean, they went from being one of the worst defenses in the league to being a top 10 defense last year. And that was a defense with a lot of holes. I thought Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator, did a pretty amazing job. But, you know, they added, through the draft, they added several linebackers. They felt they needed to strengthen there. They added Justin Houston, who they still think can be a double-digit sack guy, you know, from Kansas City. You know, they still need a pass rush. You know, the type of defense they play, that Tony Dungy, Tampa 2 style, the front four has got to get pressure if that defense is going to work. And that, I think, is the big question for the coaches and for people who, you know, get paid to watch them is, can they get pressure on the quarterback? And it's going to be especially important this year because last year they faced just one quarterback who was in the top 10 in QBR. That was Tom Brady. This year they faced six of the top 10. So they're going to be challenged in ways that they weren't challenged last year. And that pass rush is going to be very important.
What is the Frank Reich signature? I mean, first-year head coach, what did you see in the Colts that was different, and what do you see about him as a head coach making that move to become a head coach in this league?
Absolutely seamless, you know, and, you know, when you consider that he was probably plan D, you know, after the whole Josh McDaniels fiasco, he has been a perfect fit here in Indianapolis. He's just got this swag about him. The players respond to him, you know, clearly being a former NFL player himself, I think that helps. Offensively, they are much more multifaceted than they were under the previous regime with Chuck Pagano and for a while there, Rob Chudzinski as the offensive coordinator. And I think the other thing that Reich has shown is that he's going to be fearless. At times, I think it's reckless, but he will be absolutely fearless going for it on fourth down. You know, I remember the Houston game last year when he could have tied the game and instead, decided or could have settled for a tie and instead went for it. And Houston ended up kicking the game-winning field goal in overtime, which I thought was a bit of a gift. But that was Frank Reich trying to show his young team, his new team, that he would take those kinds of chances and that he expected them to get it done for him.
Adam Vinatieri, does he still have a leg?
Last I checked, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone to a couple of practices, and it looks like Vinatieri putting it through the uprights. I mean, he's 68 years old.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, he's just amazing. You know, I mean, we know that kickers last longer than others, but, you know, I mean, to me, he's a Hall of Famer. He's, you know, when he loses it, he's going to lose it, and you would think that I knowing Adam as I do, I think he will be one of those rare athletes who knows before anybody tells him that he's done. But quite frankly, he's just happy to go year by year on his contract, see how he feels, and see if he's still being productive. And I think that remains one of the Colts' real strengths.
I ask this question a lot of these teams when we do these previews. We all kind of have these ideas of where our team really is, right? We all want a Super Bowl, but some of us are more realistic in the teams we either cover or root for. For Indianapolis, is this Super Bowl or nothing? Is it AFC Championship? Is there a way to sort of look at 2019 and find a benchmark of success?
Yeah, I think getting deep into the playoffs, whether that's, you know, second round or the third round. I don't think they've been built yet to say this is a Super Bowl or bust type of season. I don't think they're there with Kansas City and teams, you know, of that nature. But I do think they feel like if they can keep Andrew healthy, there's no reason why they can't win 10, 11 games. No reason they can't win the AFC South. No reason they can't have home field advantage at some points in the playoffs. So, you know, I think AFC championship game or second round, I think that would probably be a reasonable expectation.
Bob, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Hope to get you on again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
You got it. Bob Kravitz again at The Athletic. Great website. Good stuff. They always have good content there. And Bob Kravitz is one of the premier writers covering the Colts. And he's brought to you by Progressive on our Progressive Insurance Hotline. Make it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. That's Progressive. Get your quote at progressive.com today. All right. Coming up, our thoughts on the Colts and where they realistically are in a division Ron and I are pretty familiar with, given I live in Nashville. He's in Houston. And I'm looking at the teams locally in the AFC South. We'll give you our thoughts coming up next on AFC and SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio
and on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And this hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. What do you think? 10-6 for the Colts?
Yeah, you know,
winning
what?
The division?
It all depends on one guy.
I know.
That's the problem. Amazing. With this team. This team that really is sole dependence on one guy. It's like the Packers.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Without them, they're 4-12, right?
Yep.
I mean, without them, they're lousy.
Is this still Jacoby Brissett?
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett? Yeah, that's right. That's right. He's the backup. That's right. But no, I think he's right on the money. I think because he really knows the team well. Look, this is one of the reasons I like asking the question, where realistically are teams? Because not every team is Super Bowl or bust, right? Not every team is built for that. Right. He mentioned the Chiefs. They're one. Patriots, obviously. There's a couple of others, but that's it. This is a Colts team that I wouldn't put in that category at all. Look, the division is tough. Look, the Houston Texans, when everything's going right, are going to win a lot of games this year. Tennessee is not going to win 12 games, but they can be good enough, especially defensively, that they'll scare you and beat you, right? Winning 7 or 8 of them. And a couple of them will be in your own division. So in Jacksonville, we'll see what Nick Foles. This is not going to be a division where there's one team and you should beat the other three, or two and they should beat the other two. If Jacksonville gets production out of Foles enough to make them a threat, this is where 9-7 might win the division. We don't know. And if that's the case, you got to be careful, because if 9-7 wins the division and you don't get it, you're not making the wild card.
Now, you know what the problem is with all four of these teams is that they're going to beat each other up.
Right.
It is one of those. It is one of those divisions. I mean, we've said that about other divisions, but you know, look at the Patriots. The Patriots can look at their division, and go, okay, we got what is that? That's 9-6 wins right there.
Yep.
Just look at it and go 6 wins. With this one, and any given Sunday, the Colts can beat the Titans can beat the Colts. Jaguars can beat the Colts, Colts can beat the Jaguars. No one, I don't really see anyone sweeping just yet.
That's what I'm thinking, right? And that's what I'm not seeing. So again, you've got to be careful because you're trying to win enough games that A, you win the division, but B, you also win enough to put you in contention for one of the two wild card spots. Look at the NFC East. The NFC East has this problem, right? Where you'll have some good teams there, but some years, not all the time, but some years, 9-7 wins the division because they all beat each other up. And then the second place team doesn't go to the wild card. Right? Where last year you had Dallas win the division and the Eagles made the playoffs too. But sometimes when you get a division that's so competitive that there's no bottom feeder, I don't think there's a bottom feeder here yet. I'll wait to see, but I don't think there's a 3-13 team in this division or, a team that is just, hey, give us a couple of years, but right now you can feast on our ineptitude.
That's not
happening in this division yet.
Is if there's no luck.
There's no luck. Right. You're right. No luck. And if that happens, they become your bottom feeder team. Absolutely right. It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM on a Monday.